So Krishna has left Hastinapur and arrived just by Dwarka, or at the outskirts of Dwarka. Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers had followed Krishna with armies as if to protect him, because this was their mood. But really they wanted to be with him as much as possible, because the thought of his separation rendered them lifeless. When Krishna would leave, it would be like the life left their body. The purpose of their existence was no longer present. But in that separation, Krishna was also there for them, wonderfully. But yet, the residents of Hastinapur were now similar to the residents of Vrindavan. The residents of Vrindavan were deeply bereft of Krishna. All of Vrindavan was covered by a great cloud of gloom, and now Hastinapur was the same. And Krishna is entering Dwarka. Text 1. Suta Goswami said, upon reaching the border of his most prosperous metropolis. What does metropolis mean? You know? A city, a big city is a metropolis. Known as the country of the Anartas, Dwarka. The Lord sounded his auspicious conch shell, heralding his arrival and apparently pacifying the dejection of the inhabitants. So the residents of Dwarka were already liberated souls. They were demigods who had come to participate in Krishna Lila, and they were also eternal associates of Krishna. And for these exalted personalities, separation from the Lord again was practically like death. And to begin the mitigation or the removal of their misery, their transcendental gloom caused by separation from Krishna, Krishna, as soon as he reached the outskirts of Dwarka, he blew his conch shell. What was the name of his conch shell? Panchajanya. And where did Krishna get this conch shell? Huh?
In the lake where he go into the lake to fight the demon?
To actually, not exactly to fight the demon, but that happened.
Yeah.
To recover his the sons of Devaki. Prabhupada's purport. So Krishna blew his conch shell, and all the residents of Dwarka heard that. The beloved Lord was away from his own prosperous metropolis of Dwarka for a considerably longer period because of the battle of Kurukshetra. And thus all the inhabitants were overcome with melancholia, depression, due to separation, to the separation from Krishna. When the Lord descends on the earth, his eternal associates also come with him, just as the entourage of a king accompanies him. Such associates of the Lord are eternally liberated souls, and they cannot bear the separation of the Lord even for a moment because of intense affection for the Lord. Thus the inhabitants of the city of Dwarka were in a mood of dejection and expected the arrival of the Lord at any moment. So the heralding sound of the auspicious conch shell was very encouraging, and apparently the sound pacified their dejection. But it caused them, it caused the great desire to see Krishna to spring up in their heart, because now he was close by. They recognized the sound of the conch shell, so it wasn't that they were satisfied. They wanted now to see Krishna. they were still more aspirant to see the Lord amongst themselves, and all of them became alert to receive him in a befitting manner. These are the signs of spontaneous love of Godhead. They wanted to act according to their position and greet him and receive him. The white and fat-boweled conchel, being gripped by the hand of Lord Krishna and sounded by him, appeared to be reddened by the touch of his transcendental lips, because Krishna's lips were a reddish color and the conchel was white. So the conchel appeared somewhat reddish due to the proximity with Krishna's lips. It seemed that a white swan was playing in the stems of red lotus flowers. We'll read from purport, starting, and I think it's the second line. Factually, there is nothing like matter in spiritual enlightenment. And this spiritual enlightenment takes place at once by the contact of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. So that's actually the methodology of the Krishna consciousness movement, as started by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Srila Prabhupada has continued it. It is somehow or another to always keep in contact with Krishna. Somehow or another, keep always in contact with Krishna. Because by thinking of Krishna, by serving Krishna, by chanting Krishna's names, by hearing about Krishna, by serving him in one way or another, those activities are transcendental. They are no different from Krishna. Abhina tvam nama namano is Krishna's name. And the person Krishna are not different from each other. So spiritual enlightenment takes place at once by the contact of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. The Lord is present in every particle of all existence. So that means that actually we cannot avoid contacting Krishna. Why? Because he's everywhere in everything. There is nothing that's different from him. But our consciousness, being averse to Krishna, keeps us from realizing this. And this is what matter is, the technical definition of matter. When the Brahma Jyoti is covered by Maya, which causes forgetfulness of Krishna, that is called matter. So when the Maya is removed, then one sees Krishna everywhere. Sarvatra hoya nija ishta deva spoti. One sees everything as a manifestation of his worshipable Lord. So the Lord is present in every particle of all existence, and he can manifest his presence in anyone. By ardent love and devotion to the Lord, or in other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord, everything becomes spiritually reddened like the conchel in the grip of the Lord. And the Paramhamsa, or the supremely intelligent person, plays the part of the ducking swan in the water of spiritual bliss, eternally decorated by the lotus flower of Krishna's, of the Lord's feet. So the intelligent person, the Paramhamsa, he is expert at diving wherever he is, even in the material world, and he's seeing Krishna. He takes the essence of the material world. The essence of the material world is that it's not separate from Krishna, and it's meant for him. So he lives on that essence, like the swan extracts the milk from the water. And everything thereby becomes spiritually reddened by that contact. The citizens of Dwarka, having heard that sound which threatens fears personified in the material world, what sound? Kansha. They began to run towards him fast. So the conch shell threatens fear. So when someone is threatened, what do they want to do? They want to go in the exact opposite direction. That's the best defense, to run, or the simplest anyway, to run in the opposite direction. But that conch shell, which is so threatening that even fear itself, death, is frightened of it, it pulled the residents of Dwarka towards it, its source of the sound. So they began to run towards them, not even jogging. They ran fast. Why? Just to have a long-desired audience with the Lord, who is the protector of all devotees. They weren't thinking, anyway, Krishna is outside the city now. It'll just be 10 minutes or a half hour before he enters. We can take it easy. Dire, dire, we'll go. No! Spontaneously, they were so eager to see Krishna. Why? Because they loved him so deeply. It wasn't force, it was spontaneous. Prabhupada's purport. As already explained, the citizens of Dwarka who lived at the time of Lord Krishna's presence were all liberated souls who descended there along with the Lord as entourage. And all were very anxious to have an audience of the Lord. Although, because of spiritual contact, they were never separated from the Lord. Just as the gopis of Vrindavan used to think of Krishna while he was away from the village for cowherding engagements, the citizens of Dwarka were all immersed in thoughts of the Lord while he was away from Dwarka to attend the battle of Kurukshetra. The citizens of Dwarka were thus in a state of melancholy due to the Lord's absence from the transcendental city, although they were associating with him constantly by always thinking of him. This is a mysterious spiritual occurrence. As much as we are put in a state of melancholy at night because of the absence of the sun, the sound heralded by Lord Krishna was something like the heralding of the sunrise in the morning. So all the citizens of Dwarka awoke from a state of slumber because of the sunrise of Krishna, and they all hastened towards him just to have an audience. The devotees of the Lord know no one else as protector. This sound of the Lord is identical with the Lord, as we have tried to explain by the non-dual position of the Lord. The material existence of our present status is full of fear. Out of the four problems of material existence, namely the food problem, the shelter problem, the fear problem, and the mating problem, the fear problem gives us more trouble than the others. We are always fearful due to our ignorance of the next problem. We don't know what's going to hit us next and where it's going to come from. The whole material existence is full of problems. And thus the fear problem is always prominent. This is due to our association with the illusory energy of the Lord, known as Maya, or external energy. Yet all fear is vanished as soon as there is the sound of the Lord, represented by his holy name, as it was sounded by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the following 16 words. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare. We can take advantage of these sounds and be freed from all threatening problems of material existence. There's a wonderful pastime spoken of in the fourth canto where Dhruva Maharaj is being overpowered by so many illusions, and then he understands that he has to, by the good advice, that he has to take shelter of the Lord, and he uses his Narayan weapon, and by the virtue of Krishna's, all the illusion is dispelled. And Prabhupada's purport is very similar to this, how we have to take shelter of Krishna's names, of the Hare Krishna mantra, to remove the fear that is so dominant in this world. So dominant. What is everyone afraid of? Everyone, there's unlimited things actually to be afraid of, and not knowing when they're going to come and which direction they're going to come in. Because we're holding on to things that are not ours, especially the body. So when we take shelter of Krishna through his holy names, which are so easily available, then we can actually be fearless, although in the material world. So in any case, now the residents of Dwarka, having come back to life due to the presence of Krishna, and running towards him, they begin to approach him. And Krishna begins to exchange loving affairs with them. The citizens arrive before their lord with their respective presentations, offering them to the full satisfaction and self-sufficient one, for the fully satisfied and self-sufficient one, who by his own potency incessantly supplies others. These presentations were like the offering of a lamp to the sun, yet the citizens began to speak in ecstatic language to receive the Lord, just as wards welcome their guardian and father. There's a comment I can read at this time from Srila Jiva Goswami, several comments. To text, yes, 4 and 5, he says, they all came forward to speak to Krishna and make presentations to him. And he comments, it is natural that those who pray for his love, which they will do, should get it. For he whose nature is full of happiness feels love for his devotees. And also Jiva Goswami says, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always happy in himself, and because his desires are always fulfilled, he is pleased even by the smallest offering. And in pretty and to show how the Dwarka citizens' gifts to the Lord were saturated with priti, or deep affection, their extraordinary happiness and love in seeing him again, and that caused the Lord's pleasure. So he cites this verse. Srila Jiva Goswami cites this verse to show how Krishna is pleased even by the smallest offering if it is made with devotion, affection, priti. And because he's fully satisfied, so there's no need for him to externally receive an offering. It's just the affection that's being exchanged. Text 6. So in text 6 through half of text 10, 5.5 verses, the citizens will speak to Krishna. This is what they say. They run towards him, and this is their realizations of who they are running towards. O Lord, you are worshipped by all the demigods like Brahma, the four Shanas. Who are the four Shanas? Four Kumaras, yes. And even the King of Heaven. You are the ultimate rest for those who are really aspiring to achieve the highest benefit of life. You are the Supreme Transcendental Lord. An inevitable time cannot exert its influence upon you. So as the residents of the ladies on the rooftops in Hastinapur were understanding that this person who was leaving them now was actually the source of everything, and yet they were crying trying to hold back their tears, and they were going lifeless, practically speaking. Now the residents of Dwarka will have their turn to speak. And they, as the residents of Hastinapur are crying, they are coming back to life. And they also understand the position of Krishna. O creator of the universe, you are our mother, well-wisher, Lord, Father, spiritual master, and worshipable deity. By following in your footsteps, we have become successful in every respect. We pray, therefore, that you continue to bless us with your mercy. Oh, It is our good luck that we have come again today under your protection, by your presence. For your Lordship rarely visits even the denizens of heaven. Now it is possible for us to look into your smiling face, which is full of affectionate glances, because he's affectionately glancing at everyone. We can now see your transcendental form, full of all auspiciousness. So the Lord is rarely seen by the denizens of heaven, but the residents of Dwarka, because they're being pure devotees, see him quite regularly. O lotus-eyed Lord, when you go away to Mathura, Vrindavan, or Hastinapur to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like millions of years, like a million years. O infallible one, at that time our eyes become useless, as if bereft of the sun. How amazing! We're getting glimpses of what true spiritual love is like. If one doesn't see one's beloved, if one doesn't see Krishna, one thinks one's eyes are useless. This is just how the gopis prayed when Krishna had disappeared from their sight. What is the use of these eyes if they do not see the wonderful form of Krishna? Srila Jiva Goswami comments on this verse. Once having seen the Lord, one will not be satisfied unless one is always seeing him. So therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami prays in Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, don't go and see Krishna. He's saying the opposite, obviously, of what he's really intending. But don't go and see Krishna, who is standing at Vamsivat, under the Vamsivat tree, and he's playing his flute by the Yamuna. And his form and activities and the sound of his flute is so sweet that if you see him, that you won't have any affection anymore for your family, for your country, for your wealth, for anything. You will lose all your affection for the material world. So don't go and see him. Once one has seen Krishna, even once, one is not satisfied unless one is always seeing him. Without Krishna, Jiva Goswami comments, all becomes useless. That's just how... who prayed like that? In your presence, the land has become wonderful because it is marked by your footprints. But are you leaving us today and that will leave our entire land completely empty, useless? Kunti Devi. So this is what devotion is. It is fixed and focused. It only values one thing. Love is when one's affection is focused fully on one object. One cannot love Krishna and the material world at the same time. One has to either love the material world or love Krishna. So we're in the process of breaking up with the material world, breaking up our relationship with the material world, and moving towards our loving relationship. Now, in this verse, there's something very special and interesting. And once you see it, it's obvious. But once you don't see it, if you don't see it, it might not be obvious. Now, what's interesting about it? I'll read it again. O lotus-eyed Lord, when you go away... So Krishna has just returned after the battle of Kurukshetra to Dwarka. Whenever you go away to Mathura, Vrindavan, or Hastinapur to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like a million years. This is Mahaprabhu's words. It's the moment. It seems like a million years or more and tears are flowing down my eyes like torrents of rain. O infallible one, at that time our eyes become useless, as if bereft. So I shouldn't really have phrased it interesting and not interesting, because it's all interesting. But something a little hidden and special. Yeah. Yes. Look at that. Krishna left Vrindavan, went to Mathura, went to Dwarka, sometimes went to Hastinapur. But here, the residents of Dwarka are saying, when you leave here, we miss you so heartily. Our life is useless. And where do you sometimes go? Sometimes you go to Mathura, Vrindavan, or Hastinapur. So Krishna, this verse implies that Krishna sometimes visited Vrindavan. Now, when does Krishna visit Mathura and Vrindavan? That's explained, and we shall read those explanations. But before we read that explanation, we'll read something that happened before Krishna went to Vrindavan, and that was the residents of Vrindavan met him. Now, where did the residents of Vrindavan meet Krishna before Krishna visited Vrindavan? Kurukshetra, on the occasion of the solar eclipse. Has anyone been to there's a kunda, a lake, called Panihit Sarov, where the gopis actually met with Krishna, and there is a wonderful conversation that took place that's recorded in the 10th canto of the Bhagavad about that. But here, so we're going to read about this. So this is from 10th canto, chapter 84, text 65. This is the teachings of the sages of Kurukshetra when Krishna and all the residents of Dwarka and many, many sages from all over India and also the residents of Vrindavan, they came to Kurukshetra at that time to all have darshan of Krishna. So, but then after the eclipse was over and it was time to go back, there was a conversation going on between Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev. What an interesting relationship they had, because Vasudev, as we know, the father of Krishna, placed Krishna in the care of Nanda Maharaj and then took him away again and practically wouldn't give him back. Why wouldn't Vasudev allow, or the residents of Dwarka, why wouldn't he allow Krishna to go, even though the residents of Vrindavan were so brokenhearted, why wouldn't they allow it? Yes, Krishna's relationship with the residents of Vrindavan is so deep, he'll never come back. They'll never let him come back, and he won't want to come back due to the love. So, his heart softened by feelings of intimate sympathy, Vasudev wept by Nanda Maharaj's heartfelt saying, please, we need Krishna back. Well, he didn't actually say that, but just talking about the tribulations that they had been going through without Krishna. So Vasudev wept. His eyes brimmed with tears as he remembered the friendship Nanda had shown him. And on his part, Nanda was also full of affection for his friend Vasudev. Thus, during the following days, Nanda would repeatedly announce, I will be leaving later today. And I will be leaving tomorrow. So in the daytime, he would say, I'm leaving, going back to Vrindavan today. And then in the evening, he would say, I'm leaving tomorrow. But out of love for Krishna and Balaram, he remained there for 3 more months, honored by all the Yadus. Here's the purport. After settling that he would leave first thing in the morning, Nanda Maharaj would then decide, I'll go later today. And then when the afternoon came, he would say, I'll just stay until tomorrow. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti suggests one possible reason for his procrastination. Nanda secretly intended to bring Krishna back with him to Braja, but did not want to break Vasudeva's heart. Thus his indecision continued for 3 months. Now, we're getting ideas from associating with all these personalities of what love for Krishna is. And we're also getting a flavor of that love by this association. Text 67, 68. Then after Vasudeva, Ugrasena, Krishna, Uddhava, Balaram and others had fulfilled his desires and presented him with precious ornaments, fine linens and varieties of priceless household furnishings, Nanda Maharaj accepted all these gifts and took his leave. Seen off by all the Yadus, he departed with his family members and the residents of Braja. Purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, at the end of the 3 months, Nanda Maharaj approached Krishna and told him, "My dear son, for one drop of perspiration from your divine face, I'm ready to give up countless lives. Let us leave now for Braja. I cannot spend any more time here." Then he went to Vasudeva and told him, "My dear friend, please send Krishna to Braja." And of King Ugrasena he requested, "Please order my friend to do this. If you refuse, I will have to drown myself in Lord Parsaram's lake. Just watch if you don't believe me. You'll see it with your own eyes." We people of Braja came to this holy place not to gain some piety on the occasion of the solar eclipse, but to get Krishna back or die. Hearing these desperate words from Nanda, Vasudeva and others tried to pacify him with valuable gifts. Well versed in the art of diplomacy, Vasudeva consulted with his most trustworthy advisors and then satisfied Sri Nanda by telling him, "My dearest friend, O King of Braja, it is of course true that none of you can live without Krishna. And how can we allow you to kill yourself? Therefore, by all means, I must send Krishna back to Braja. I will do so right after we accompany him and his relatives and friends, amongst them many helpless women, back to Dwarka." Then the very next day, without trying to obstruct him in any way, I will let him leave for Braja at an auspicious time of the day. This I swear to you 1,000 times over. After all, how can we who came here with Krishna go home without him? What will people say about us? You are a great scholar in all matters, so please forgive me for making this request of you." Next, Ugrasena addressed Nanda Maharaj. "My dear master of Braja, I bear witness to Vasudeva's statement, and I take this solemn vow. I will send Krishna back to Braja even if I have to do it by force." Then Lord Krishna, joined by Uddhav and Balaram, spoke to Nanda in private. He said, "Dear father, if I go directly to Braja today, leaving aside all these Rishnis, they will die from the pain of separation from me. Then many thousands of enemies more powerful than even Keshi and Arista will come to annihilate all these kings. Since I am omniscient, I know what is inevitably going to happen to me. Listen, and I will describe it to you. After returning to Dwarka, I will receive an invitation from Yudhisthira, and I will go to Indraprastha to participate in his Rajasuya sacrifice. There, I will kill Shishupal, after which I will again return to Dwarka and kill Salva. Next, I will travel to a place just south of Mathura to save you by killing Dantavakra. I will then go back to Braja, see all my old friends, and again sit on your lap with great pleasure. Indeed, with great happiness, I will spend the rest of my life with you. God has written this fate on my forehead, and it has been written on your foreheads, that until the day I return, you must tolerate separation from me. Neither of our destinies can possibly be changed. So please find the courage to leave me here for now and go home to Braja. And if in the meantime you, my dear parents, and you, my beloved friends, are distressed by the unavoidable fate written on our foreheads, then whenever you wish to feed me some delicacy or play some game with me, or simply see me, just close your eyes and I will appear before you to turn your torment into sky flowers and fulfill all your desires. I promise you this, and the young friends of mine whose lives I saved in a forest fire can vouch for it. Convinced by all these arguments that his son's happiness was of prime importance, Nanda accepted the gifts offered him and took his leave, accompanied by the Yaru's large army. 69. Unable to withdraw their minds from Lord Govinda's lotus feet, where they had surrendered unto them, Nanda and the coward men and women returned to Mathura. Then, in chapter 78, that was chapter 66, in chapter 78, there is one comment which has to do with the killing. This is the killing of Dantavakra and Romaharshan. Excuse me? Which? Chapter 78. Verse 16. This is about the killing of Salva. Because Krishna was in Dwarka and Salva attacked Dwarka on his powerful aeroplane. And then there's an incredible description of this fight that took place. And just after that, we'll just hear what happened. I'm not going to read this whole comment, which is very, very nice, but it's quite lengthy. Because it describes in the Padma Purana, it describes more detail about Krishna's going back to Vrindavan. After Salva was killed, then Narada Muni came and told Krishna, while Krishna was outside of the city of Dwarka, Narada Muni came and told Krishna that Dantavakra had gone to Mathura to fight with Krishna and to give the residents of Vrindavan trouble. So Krishna had to go there immediately. And he did that. Now, I'm reading from about halfway, if you're following it, maybe it's two-thirds of the way. Lord Krishna's journey in the purport from Dwarka to Vrindavan is confirmed to Braja, from Dwarka to Braja is confirmed by the following passage of Srimad Bhagavatam. 111.9, that is the verse that we were just looking at, where the residents of Dwarka are saying, when you leave and go to Mathura, Vrindavan, and Hastinapur, every moment feels like a million years. So then it quotes that verse. O lotus-eyed Lord, whenever you go away to Mathura, Vrindavan, or Hastinapur to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like a million years. Lord Krishna had been harboring a desire to see his friends and relatives in Braja ever since Lord Balaram had gone there, Baladev had gone there. But his mother, father, and other elders of Dwarka had refused to give him permission. Now, however, after the killing of Salva, when Krishna heard from Narada that Dantavakra had gone to Mathura, no one could object to the Lord's going there immediately without first entering Dwarka. So Krishna had to go to Mathura because Dantavakra was threatening. So without entering Dwarka again after Salva was killed and without having the problem of taking permission from all the elders who would refuse to let him go back to Vrindavan, so Krishna immediately went to Dwarka in a moment. And after killing Dantavakra, he would have the opportunity to meet with his friends and relatives living in Braja. Thinking like this and also remembering Uddhava's allusion to the gopis in the words Gayanti Te Visharakama from the 10th canto, Krishna went to Braja, dispelling the feelings of separation from the inhabitants. For 2 months, Lord Krishna enjoyed in Vrindavan just as before, previous to his leaving there to kill Kamsa in Mathura. Then, at the end of 2 months, he withdrew his Braja pastimes from mundane eyes by taking the demigod portions of his parents and other relatives and friends to Vaikuntha. Thus, in one complete plenary manifestation, he went to Golok in the spiritual world. In another complete, plenary basically means complete, complete plenary manifestation, he remained perpetually enjoying in Braja while invisible to material eyes. So he remained there in Aprakat Lila. And yet in another plenary, he divided himself into three. He mounted his chariot and returned alone to Dwarka. The people of Surasena province thought that after killing Dantavakra, Krishna had paid a visit to his parents and other dear ones and now was returning to Dwarka. The people of Braja, on the other hand, could not understand where he had suddenly disappeared to. And so they were totally astonished. And they just thought about Krishna and thought about Krishna. And thus in that meditation they associated with Krishna in the Aprakat Lila. And then just one other short comment by Sanatana Goswami from his Vaishnava Toshini. Sanatana Goswami gives a sequence of the order in which the pastimes took place. First was the solar eclipse, then the Rajasuya assembly, then the gambling match and attempted disrobing of Draupadi, then the Pandavas exile to the forest, then the killing of Salva and Dantavakra, then Krishna's visit to Vrindavan, and finally the winding up of the Vrindavan pastimes. At the last paragraph in the purport to 10.78.17. But it's a long purport that describes Padma Purana, and it describes why, interestingly enough, describes why Maharaj Prickett didn't hear this. It's quoted in the Padma Purana, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I believe, explains why Sukadev Goswami didn't tell this to Maharaj Prickett this past time. Because it would, and he explains that it would entail having told that all of Vrindavan went back to Godhead with Krishna. And I believe this is also described in the Gopal Champu by Srila Jiva Goswami. And then when Maharaj Prickett would compare the departure of the residents of Vrindavan back to Godhead with Krishna, compared that to the departure of the residents of Dwarka, the Yadus, who he had a more intimate relationship with, how they all killed each other in the fratricidal war, he would have become morose and depressed. Something like that. So Sukadev didn't tell him this pastime. For that reason, he did not want to see him become discouraged. Very interesting. So Krishna has just entered Dwarka. And we'll go back to that. So the residents, they said, whenever you go away to Mathura, Vrindavan, Hastinapur to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like a million years. Oh, Master, if you live abroad all the time, then we cannot look at your attractive face, whose smiles vanquish all our suffering. How can we exist without your presence? Somehow or another, we here in the material world are doing it, but not existing very happily. Prabhupada's purport. Lord Krishna's attraction is so powerful that once being attracted by him, One cannot tolerate separation from Him. Why is this so? Because we are all eternally related with Him, as the sun rays are eternally related with the sun disk. The sun rays are molecular parts of the solar radiation. Thus the sun rays and the sun cannot be separated. The separation by the cloud is temporary and artificial. And as soon as the cloud is cleared, the sun rays again display their natural effulgence in the presence of the sun. Similarly, the living entities who are molecular parts of the whole spirit are separated from the Lord by the artificial covering of Maya, illusory energy. This illusory energy, or the curtain of Maya, has to be removed. And when it is so done, the living entity can see the Lord face to face, and all his miseries are at once removed. Every one of us wants to remove the miseries of life, but we do not know how to do it. The solution is given here, and it rests on us to assimilate it or not. As Bhogavati, the capital of Nagalok, is protected by the Nagas, so was Dwarka protected by the descendants of Rishi. Oh, I didn't read the second half of the verse, I think. I'm sorry, it's a 10. So they had, the residents of Dwarka had finished their speeches, and then they said, and then Sukadeva continues, or Sutta continues rather, upon hearing their speeches, the Lord, who was very kind to the citizens and the devotees, entered the city of Dwarka and acknowledged all their greetings by casting his transcendental glance on them. As Bhogavati, the capital of Nagaloka, is protected by the Nagas, so was Dwarka protected by the descendants of Vishnu, Bhoja, Madhu, Dasaha, Arha, Kukora, and Andaka, who were all as strong as Lord Krishna. The city of Dwarkapuri was filled with the opulences of all seasons. There were hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks, and reservoirs of water breeding lotus flowers all over. So Krishna basically had manufactured or made a city according to his own liking. And the verses 12 to 14, these four verses, describe exactly what this wonderful city looked like. There were gardens, parks, water, hermitages, orchards, flowers blooming in all seasons. The city gateways, the household doors, and festooned arches along the roads were all nicely decorated with festive signs like plantain trees and mango leaves, all to welcome the Lord. Flags, garlands, and painted signs and slogans all combined to shade the sunshine. The highways, subways, lanes, markets, and public meeting places were all thoroughly cleansed and then moistened with scented water. And to welcome the Lord, fruits, flowers, and unbroken seeds were strewn everywhere. So these are all auspicious, and they make the whole atmosphere very good and auspicious. In each and every door of the residential houses, auspicious things like curd, unbroken fruit, sugarcane, and full water pots with articles for worship, incense, and candles were all displayed. On hearing that the most dear Krishna was approaching Dwarka Dham, magnanimous Vasudeva, Akura, Ugrasena, Balaram, the superhumanly powerful, Pradyumna, Charudesna, and Samba, the son of Jambavati, all extremely happy, abandoned resting, sitting, and dining. They hastened towards the Lord on chariots with Brahmins bearing flowers. Before them were elephants, emblems of good fortune. Conchals and bugles were sounded, and Vedic hymns were chanted. Thus they offered their respects, which were saturated with affection. At the same time, many hundreds of well-known prostitutes began to proceed on various vehicles. They were all very eager to meet the Lord, and their beautiful faces were decorated with dazzling earrings, which enhanced the beauty of their foreheads. We'll read the first paragraph of this purport of Prabhupada's. We may not hate even the prostitutes if they are devotees of the Lord. Even to date, there are many prostitutes in great cities of India who are sincere devotees of the Lord. By tricks of chance, one may be obliged to adopt a profession which is not very adorable in society, but that does not hamper one in executing devotional service to the Lord. Devotional service to the Lord is uncheckable. It's uncheckable in all circumstances. There is no material circumstance that can stop it. Prabhupada, I heard a conversation that Prabhupada was having with a psychologist, and he was giving the devotees psychological tests. He was very, very, very favorable to the devotees, and he wanted to have a 2-year program, and he was going to show how the mental health of people who take the Krishna consciousness increases. So Prabhupada said, even if you find them crazy, it doesn't make any difference. Even if you find discrepancies, because they are devotees, and devotional service is uncheckable in any circumstance, even if someone is crazy. So that should be encouraging to some of us. But we have to be devotees. It is understood herewith that even in those days, about 5,000 years ago, there were prostitutes in a city like Dwarka, where Lord Krishna resided. But also, one of the 26 qualities of a devotee is to be sane, by the way, because the only sane thing is to be a devotee. This means that prostitutes are necessary citizens for the proper upkeep of society. The government opens wine shops, but this does not mean that the government encourages the drinking of wine. The idea is that there is a class of men who will drink at any cost, and it has been experienced that prohibition in great cities encourages illicit smuggling of wine. Similarly, men who are not satisfied at home require such concessions, and if there is no prostitute, then such low men will induce others into prostitution. It is better that prostitutes be available in the marketplace so that the sanctity of society can be maintained. It is better to maintain a class of prostitutes than to encourage prostitutes within society. The real reformation is to enlighten all people to become devotees of the Lord, and that will check all kinds of deteriorating factors of life. So Krishna entered, and even the prostitutes approached him. Expert dramatists, artists, dancers, singers, historians, genealogists, and learned speakers all gave their respective contributions. So everyone made some offering or another to Krishna. Being inspired by the superhuman pastimes of the Lord, thus they proceeded on and on. Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, approached them and offered due honor and respect to each and every one of the friends, relatives, citizens, and all others who came to receive and welcome him. The Almighty Lord greeted everyone present by bowing his head before superiors, exchanging greetings, embracing, shaking hands, looking and smiling, giving assurances and awarding benedictions, even to the lowest in rank. We'll read Prabhupada's short purports to those two verses, 21 and 22. The Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is neither impersonal nor an inert object unable to reciprocate the feelings of his devotees. Here's the word yata vidhi, or just as it behooves, is significant. He reciprocates just as it behooves with his different types of admirers and devotees. Of course, the pure devotees are of one type only, because they have no other object for service but the Lord. And therefore, the Lord also reciprocates with such pure devotees just as it behooves. Namely, he is always attentive to all the matters of his pure devotees. There are others who designate him as impersonal, and so the Lord also does not take any personal interest. That's very, very clever. The devotees are personal with Krishna, the Supreme Lord. So Krishna deals with them personally. The impersonalists say that the Supreme has no qualities, and offers, and atheists say there is no God, and Krishna reciprocates with them as if he has no qualities, and if there is no God, he gives them no mercy. How fitting. Yehi tamam prapadyante. How fitting, just as it behooves. He satisfies everyone in terms of one's development of spiritual consciousness, and a sample of such reciprocation is exhibited here with his different welcomers. So there were many different grades of population, including the most respected Ugrasena and Chandalas, and Krishna reciprocated with them according to their position. The last several lines of Prabhupada's purport to 22. He descends only to recall these materialistic living beings back to his kingdom, and intelligent persons take advantage of this facility offered by the personality of Godhead to all living beings. So he's reciprocating with everyone according to their positions. No one is rejected by the Lord from the kingdom of God, and it remains with the living being to accept this or not. Then the Lord personally, text 23, entered the city accompanied by elderly relatives and invalid brahmanas with their wives, all offering benedictions and singing the glories of the Lord. Others also praised the glories of the Lord. When Lord Krishna passed over the public roads, all the ladies from the respectable families of Dwarka went up to the roofs of their palaces just to have a look at the Lord. They considered this to be the greatest of festivals. The inhabitants of Dwarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. And we'll read from two-thirds of the way down that final purport that we'll read today. The Lord's body is the source of everything that be, the reservoir of all beauties beyond our experience. No one, therefore, is satiated by seeing the transcendental body of the Lord, because there are always manifestations of newer and newer beauties. The transcendental name, form, qualities, entourage, etc., are all spiritual manifestations, and there is no satiation in chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no satiation in discussing the qualities of the Lord, and there is no limitation of the entourage of the Lord. He is the source of all, and is limited. And Prabhupada, in his purport to the previous verse, describes how Krishna has so kindly come as the Archa Vigraha, or the deity. So that is a form of the Lord that everyone, even those of us who don't have pure spiritual vision, we can see him, and he can fully reciprocate, and we can see him every day and never become satiated or feel that enough is enough, I don't want to see him anymore. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Stop here. Questions, comments? They illegalize? Legalize. You mean, what is our policy? Should drugs be legal or illegal? Should liquor be legal or illegal? Should prostitution be legal or illegal? Well, I've heard Prabhupada speak on these points. At one time, or more than one time, he said that we shouldn't, if we have more power, what we should do is preach about them, preach about how bad these things are, and naturally they'll be closed down. But on other times I heard, immediately close down the slaughterhouses, immediately close down the brothels, immediately stop the liquor shops like that. I think so both sides, I've heard him say both sides. The problem, just like in India, there are certain cities where drugs are freely available, like Jagannath Puri. You know, there's shops that sell drugs. And many Westerners come there just for that purpose. So the problem is that if you legalize them in a corrupt society where there is no Krishna consciousness, or you make them illegal in a corrupt society where there is no Krishna consciousness, it's going to be a disaster in any case when the materialism is rising so quickly. Whatever you do is a disaster. And in some senses, that's my understanding of what Kali Yuga is. It does two things. It makes everything into a disaster. You turn right, it's a disaster. You turn left, it's a disaster. You open it, you close it, it's a disaster. And you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. And what it does is engage people passionately on the issue. Should we open it? Should we close it? Should we open it? Close it? Fighting each other on both sides of issues. So they have no time to be Krishna conscious. And I used to observe that even here. How one issue would float into the temple. And then there'd be some devotees being really fervently on one side of the issue, and immediately there'd be another group of devotees on the exact opposite side of that same issue, and until it ran out of energy. And you see this on the internet all the time. And then as soon as it runs out of energy, a new issue gets thrown into the arena, and then the configuration of who's on one side and who's on the other side shifts and changes. And then, and then until that one runs out of energy, and then another one comes through. And I used to watch this happening again and again and again. And I understood that this is actually how, this is one of the main ways that Maya works. And this is described in the end of the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, of how te dvanva moha, that how the dualities, this side, that side, are exactly, everyone is born into these dualities. This is good, this is bad. And these become the issues of people's life, and therefore one becomes bewildered. So that's another answer to the question, exactly what a Krishna conscious government would do. The first thing it would do is be Krishna conscious. And that's the most important thing. So I hope I didn't avoid your question too much. But that's how I see it. You know, someone who's really empowered. And again, I heard Prabhupada say that preaching. And by people, if people actually understood, if there was a government, and if people actually understood how bad these things were, then they would tend to stop. And then also what Prabhupada said about slaughterhouses, for example. He really distinguished between meat-eating and slaughterhouses. Do you follow what I mean? There is meat-eating in the Vedic culture, but there's no slaughterhouses, a conspiracy to kill the animals. So maybe things like the liquor shops, or you know, maybe some drinking of liquor, maybe there's some prostitution, but there wouldn't be this big organizations that propagate it continuously, make such heavy propaganda, smoke, drink, these multi-billion dollar corporations that, you know, that control media and all that propaganda, and that couldn't be allowed. But on some small scale, maybe, yes, that would be how I would envision it, but, yes. There's further comments. Other devotees can comment on that. To which, what number? One time someone asked Prabhupada, if the whole world becomes Krishna conscious, what will happen to the factories? And Prabhupada said, let the factories go to hell. Who cares? Let them all close. He actually used that phrase. Let them all go to hell. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. Mathura, also Kubja. Why, if everyone was so exalted, why were there dog eaters and prostitutes and this and that? Yeah, oh yes, thank you. You're going to answer this question. Yes. Vridhananda Maharaj was asked this question, and here is his answer. Oh, probably be easier if I read it in the microphone. I wish I could do a good imitation of Vridhananda Maharaj, because I used to look just like him. I used to tease him. Yes. Anyway, in their commentaries on Bhagavatam 1:11:19, Sridhar Swami and others make it clear that the term Vira Mukhya here indicates female dancers, actresses, singers, and also courtesans. The term Vara Mukhya indicates that those ladies who are courtesans serve the higher classes of men. Beside the brahmanas, the higher classes in Dwarkas were Kshatriya, engaged in the passionate work of fighting and ruling. We find that even great kings like Dasarath, Pandu, Parikit engaged in hunting, and Yudhisthira, king of Dharma, gambled. So because of the difficult nature of Kshatriya work, the rulers were allowed certain facilities, as Prabhupada has explained. Prabhupada mentions that all the residents of Dwarka were liberated devotees. We find in the Acharya's commentaries on the Bhagavatam that amongst the gopis there were various categories. Some came down from the spiritual world with Krishna. Some were demigods or demigoddesses. Some were sages just achieving liberation. So we may infer that the same situation is true with the members of the Yadu dynasty. Indeed, the Bhagavatam clarifies in the 11th canto, in verses and commentaries, that amongst the Yadus were demigods. So all the Dwarkavasis were liberated by seeing Lord Krishna, but they were coming from different positions and were in the process of achieving liberation. Some of them who acted as Kshatriyas were given special facilities as mentioned above. The answer of our Vridhananda Maharaj. Thank you. Does that doesn't quite. Yes. Yes, but you wouldn't. What you wouldn't imagine a society of liberated devotees. You wouldn't. So there's something. Sometimes in Prabhupada's preaching this, he'll emphasize a point in one way to bring out some point. The point that he seems to be bringing out is that there is no material hindrance to Krishna consciousness, even if by fate or by karma one is in a lower position and is engaged in lower activities. That's the actual point he's making. I've found that just like in the Bhagavad Gita in the first chapter, there's in some purports Prabhupada will say Arjuna is exhibiting exalted qualities and compassion by his, and the next purport he'll be saying that Arjuna is exhibiting weakness. You know those purports? So the two, how could one be exalted characteristics of devotees and weakness simultaneously? So it seems that in one purport, in one context, Prabhupada's using the circumstances to make one point, and in a second context, he's using the circumstances to preach about another point. So the particular point that Prabhupada is preaching about here is mostly that point. And then a separate point is that the resonance of Dwarka by association with Krishna, as Vrindavan Maharaj is nicely pointing out, there are different stages, but by seeing Krishna, they're all getting trained. And by associating with the eternally liberated souls, they're becoming trained to be for liberation. But what I try to do when I see those kind of things is sort of just separate the points and keep them separated. Because when you separate them, they make sense. But when you try to apply them together to exactly the same circumstance, it makes your brain swim because it's contradictory. So what I do is basically I just separate them and keep them separated. That's how I deal with it. But it doesn't, yeah. Wait, let me just see, because this kind of thing comes up quite frequently. So that's how I deal with it. I see what points are being made and understand that the points are context relative and relevant. What are the points being made? And I just keep them separated. Oh yeah, Krishna, there was a comment made by, I think it was Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, but he said he separated into three plenary portions. One, he went to Goloka Vrindavan with a certain part of the residence of Vrindavan, the demigod part, and then he went uppercut. He went in uppercut Leela was the second one. And the third was he went to Dwarka. He fully performed his pastimes in uppercut Leela. He continued everything in uppercut Leela. They also were there too. And because it says they were astonished that Krishna just wasn't there anymore. Well, he had gone and he completely went into these three different ways. So it seems like they were left behind, but also because they were eternal associates of Krishna or demigods. The demigods ones went to Golok, and then the eternal associates and those who were sadhana siddhas, it seems, although they were left, they were also simultaneously, by their meditation on Krishna, they were also simultaneously with Krishna in Uppercut Leela. That would be my understanding. But there's much that points to Krishna having inconceivable powers and inconceivable achintya shakti. But there's some of these kind of questions that the acharyas do answer. No, that's different. No, that's true. But this is talking about something completely different, that they're different people. See, Prabhupada explains this when Krishna leaves Vrindavan. If you look in the Krishna book, he explains that he leaves in his Vasudeva future. If you look in the Krishna book, when Akura takes Krishna out of Vrindavan, and he remains always in uppercut, like it's explained here in the full Krishna. So he's always present as full Krishna, but he leaves in his Vasudeva future. This means that these particular people, and Prabhupada has referred to them a few times, say that they're completely different persons. Huh? You know, one is Krishna and this one's Krishna, but they're different people, completely. Different historical personalities. Is what? No. He's included within Shrimad. Huh? Yes. Everyone is included. Bhagavan Swayam. That's my understanding. And all the incarnations are there as well. And it also explains that Krishna kills all the demons through his Vasudev feature. He doesn't do that directly in Krishna. Do you have that reference? Could you look that up on the Krishna book reference? Where it explains how when Krishna leaves, he leaves in his Vrindavan in his Vasudev feature. I believe it's in the Akura. Prabhupada says great acharyas have commented on this point. Yeah, and that the example that Prabhupada gives in the purport of Chintamani. You read that as well? With Bilamangala Thakur? She was his guru. Because she set him right. And actually they had something continuing from previous births. They had cursed each other. So they had something continuing from previous births too. But yet she was an exalted devotee and he was an exalted devotee. And he commenting only on this question, at least while they're acting in full service, they're pure devotees. That's as long as they're doing that, that's what he meant. I saw Prabhupada say that also. The first time I saw Prabhupada on television, there was a person asked the question to Prabhupada, "Are you liberated?" And Prabhupada replied, "Yes, and so are all my disciples." So at least as long as they were following his instructions, at that time, they weren't following the dictates of the modes of material nature. So in that sense, yes, liberated. But immature liberated as opposed to fully mature liberated. Yeah, and also I think that when we think of liberated and especially pure devotee, we tend to, there's different definitions that come up in our mind. And when we think of pure devotee, we often, you know, think is, it means that a person is fully awake in his relationship with Krishna. And that's a person who is on that level is certainly a pure devotee. But there is there are many varieties and many stages of pure devotional service too. There's also a famous story that I can't remember where it comes from exactly, though, where there was a very pure Brahmin who was living nearby to a prostitute. Where is that from? Yeah. Yeah, so the prostitute, he was, every time a person would come to the prostitute, he wanted to remind her of how sinfully and horribly she was acting, so he put a stone outside her door. So the whole time he was thinking about her and she was thinking about how fallen she was. So in her next life she was liberated due to her humility. In the next life he was put into a peculiar circumstance. What Akura, this is different, the reference that I said, this is from the Bhagavatam, though. Akurasura in the water was the forearm Lord Vasudev. This is from Akura's vision, the summary of Akura's vision, 10th canto, 39. This wasn't the reference that I was looking at. The one I was thinking of was directly spoken by Prabhupada. No one could find that? Simple one. Yes. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Dwarkadama ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.